Hello, guten Tag, dearest listeners. Welcome to the first ever archival episode I'll do. First in the sense that this is the earliest episode by far, definitely, that I'm ever going to do. This is an incredibly special edition of not Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings, but its predecessor, Daisy's Magical Mystery Mid-2000s Movie Mumblings. I know. So the way that Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings formed was on my main show, Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix, which airs live at 6 p.m. on a Saturday every, you know, week. On CamFM 97.2, check it out if you haven't already. I used to have a segment where I just discussed a film from the early 2000s I'd seen that week, and it had this incredibly clunky title of Dave's Magical Mystery Mid-2000s Movie Mumblings, because I thought it was really funny. That then became this. I was at home over the summer break from university. Didn't even have a microphone. I have a very sexy Audio Technica microphone now, which you're hearing me record on. But during this, I was just armed with an iPad, and I would sit behind the curtains in our kitchen recording the audio for this. And I put together this giant kind of hour-long behemoth show talking about a boy, which, by the way, still to this day is my favourite film of all time, a Hugh Grant 2002 classic. But I won't get into it too much because, you know, you've got a whole hour of that to look forward to. I've remastered it for radio. This is the remastered 2025 edition. This was originally aired in summer of 2023, so it's quite a while. It's nearly 2 years old now, this broadcast, but it's it means a lot to me in a lot of ways. It's the first time I ever properly experimented with pre-recording at home. It's the first time I ever tried to use like software like Audacity for the first time, which I still use to this day, and this is literally the program where Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings stemmed from. The show which is now award nominated, and the show that is now a podcast, and the show which you are literally listening to right now. How exciting is that? It really does mean a lot to me, and I really wanted to make sure that there was an archive of this original recording somewhere on the internet for people to listen to, because my god, 21 year old Daisy put a lot of work into this. I would have been 20. 20-year-old Daisy put a lot of work into this, and I don't want that to go to waste. So here it is. Also, just a heads up, whenever you hear this noise, yeah, that's me from the future popping in to provide context on why something has been removed or changed from the original broadcast, or, as is predominantly the case, whenever I originally had a spoiler warning with the exact timestamp. Obviously things have moved around from the original edit of this show, so I've jumped in and replaced the timestamps with new ones so that you can skip ahead if you want to avoid spoilers for this film. But ideally you would have seen About a Boy before listening to this, okay? Like, it's just go and watch it, it's amazing. You already know my thoughts on it. Anyway, I hope you very much enjoy this very special archival episode. Make sure you follow me on @DaisysMagicalMysteryMix to keep up with all things radio adjacent in my hashtag life. But yeah, without further ado, enjoy. Bye.
Daisy.
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 Magical Mystery
Mid-2000s Movie Mumblings. Wahey.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very exciting kind of experiment in the Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix format. I'm actually recording this live on my bed with my iPad propped up against a cushion because we're high-flying here in the radio biz. This is actually the first ever attempt of mine to do a show sort of from my own house. You know, as I've joked about before multiple times on air, outside of term time, I live in the provincial nothingness of Sussex. And, you know, I've always wanted to do a show when I'm tragically dragged away from the mixing desk. So I thought, you know, why not revive the, you know, the much beloved Daisy's Magical Mystery Mid-2000s Movie Mumblings and give it its own show. So yeah, as I say, the show is obviously pre-recorded. So unfortunately, I won't be able to interact with your messages live, and it might be a bit more scripted. So, I mean, what I'm doing right now is not at all scripted. But, you know, what I'm going to do each week is I'll pick a movie from the mid-2000s, maybe one that I've seen and loved, as is the case of this week, as you'll see very shortly. Maybe another one that I haven't seen, or just something that someone recommended to me, and I'll talk about it. I'm going to give you a little introduction to the film, play you a clip from it, talk you through my own personal thoughts on it, and then, yeah, hopefully have a guest on who will talk to about their thoughts on the film as well. But this week, we will be going forward with my all-time favourite film ever about a boy. If you have listened, if you frequently listen to my main show, Days of Magical Mystery Mix, you will know that I am a huge fan of this film. 2002. I mean, we'll go into more so into the details in a minute, but a Hugh Grant classic. Something that really kind of transcended the rom-com era that Hugh Grant was in. And I'm very excited to kind of talk to you guys about it today over the course of this show. So yeah, what I'll do is I'll play a little clip for you, then sort of go through some more details about the film, give you my thoughts, spoiler alert, they're glowing because it's one of my favourite films of all time and I've seen it about 70 billion times. So, you know, there you go. Yeah, this might be a bit less sort of, you know, like random and chaotic than my usual shows by virtue of the format. But, you know, hopefully you guys enjoy it. I mean, just a little background on my like own film watching history. I'm a humongous film buff. I don't know if that comes across in my shows, but like I'm very, very passionate about my films. I'm a sort of militant Letterboxd user, which is slightly embarrassing to admit on air. Well, technically, this isn't on air yet. So, you know, if you're listening to this now, don't tell anyone. But yes, I'm a militant Letterboxd user. And, you know, I've always been hugely, hugely into my film. And, you know, actually, a little bit of background for you. When I first did my CAMFM training and passed my assessment, all those years ago in 2021, I was originally going to do a film-based show. I was going to do sort of a very similar thing to what I'm doing now, sort of film and TV discussion. In a sort of loose format like we normally have with Days of Magical Mystery Mix. But I thought it would be more fun each week to kind of do a musical variety show. And I have had a lot of fun presenting Days of Magical Mystery Mix over the years. And obviously that show will be making a dramatic phoenix-like from the ashes return this Michaelmas. But for now, I just thought, you know, to tide you over with some good radio content, I thought I'd revive that initial thought of mine to do a film-based discussion show and also revive Days of Magical Mystery mid-2000s movie mumblings, which was a feature I very briefly had during my shows. So yeah, I hope you enjoy. You can get in touch and leave me your feedback slash any suggestions for a film you'd like me to see if you email Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix. Our email is dmmm@camfm.co.uk. That's dmmm@camfm.co.uk. You can also get in touch with me via my Instagram at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix. Same social channels as my regular show. But yeah, without further ado, here is About a Boy. And I really hope you guys enjoy the show. It's something a little different, but yeah, enjoy.
On New Year's Eve, I met Rachel. She was interesting and smart and attractive. And for about 5 minutes, I had her convinced that I was too.
Things like, well, political events, yeah. You,
okay.
In television.
Am I in television?
Mm-hmm.
No, everyone else is in television.
Yeah.
I watch television.
Right, so you're more in front of it than in it.
In it, yeah.
Inside it.
It was torture. For 5 minutes, I realised what life would be like if I were in any way interesting. If I had anything to say for myself, if I did anything. But I didn't do anything. And in about 30 seconds, she'd know, and she'd be gone like a shot.
So, what do you do?
Well, I'm sort of taking a bit of time off at the moment.
Oh, sounds good, yeah. Time off from what?
Well, to be absolutely honest, time off from time off, in fact. The interesting thing about me is I don't actually do anything.
You don't do anything?
Actually, no.
Nothing?
Nope.
Wow. That's,
Now, Rachel, darling.
Yeah?
East Coast or West Coast rap?
Oh, God, I have absolutely...
There. She was gone. There was no more to say.
All rap music sounds exactly the same to me.
Or was that?
It does.
I tell you what, I know a 12-year-old would kill you for saying that.
Really?
Yeah.
So do I come to that.
Are you?
Yeah. What's yours called?
Mine?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody... it's called Mars.
Mine's Ali. Alistair.
And there it was.
Oh!
Daisy's Magical Mystery Mid-2000s Movie Mumblings on Cam FM.
Right, so here's a little intro to the film, in case you haven't seen it before, that I very dutifully actually scripted. I know, shocking. But here we go. About a Boy is perhaps the crown jewel of the early 2000s pantheon of coming-of-age slash Hugh Grant extravaganzas, being released theatrically in the UK in 2002, which, by the way, fun fact, was the very same year I was born, so maybe that's kind of like a bit of cohesion, I don't know if that's a word, but anyway, immediately gone off script. The film was directed by brothers Paul and Chris Weitz, following on from their huge success with 1999's American Pie. Despite the American backgrounds shared by the two brothers, About a Boy is an unapologetically British film, which I always found quite weird. Set in the suburbia of London, there is perhaps no other film that quite encapsulates the rapidly digitising, fast-paced, yet insecure and uncertain vibe, for lack of a better word, of early 2000s set design. From Sony Walkman's questionable fashion choices, and perhaps most importantly, a Hugh Grant in his early 40s. The film follows central protagonist Will, who, to quote the character himself, is a very happy island adrift at sea. He has never had a job, living happily off the royalties collected from his father's one-hit wonder Christmas smash song, Santa's Super Sleigh. Try and say that three times fast. He is everything a man his age would want, except for a purpose. He lives alone and resorts to pretending to be a single parent to flirt with single mothers, again, try saying that three times fast, at local support group SPAT, or Single Parents Alone Together. From these beginnings, Will attempts, largely unsuccessfully, might I add, to get a girlfriend. On a date with one of the single mothers, Will meets troubled fellow SPAT attendee Fiona, played by Toni Collette, and her son Marcus, played by Nicholas Hoult, in his breakout role, no less. The film was released on the 26th of April, 2002, and grossed $130 million against a $30 million budget. Something I discovered when researching this film was I didn't realise it had quite a high budget, but there you go, maybe that all went to Hugh Grant. About a Boy likewise received largely positive reviews on release and has since developed a cult following. It could just be me, but I think there is a cult following. The soundtrack, made by the ironically named Badly Drawn Boy, has also found success outside of the film, which, you know, is a rare feat for a soundtrack made specifically for a non-jukebox musical kind of film, so like, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody or Mamma Mia, that sort of thing. This is in large part thanks to the famed track Something to Talk About, which still makes me very emotional to this day whenever I listen to it. In fact, all of the songs in the background of the show are also taken from the About a Boy soundtrack, so, you know, do check it out if you have the chance. Also, I'm going to be posting a track list of every single song I play during the show, so be sure to check that out on my Instagram at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix. Also, quick note from me as I'm recording this and editing this together. Please don't come for me for the microphone quality. As I say, I'm literally using my iPad right now. Where I hire budget, you know, maybe if I had some of that $30 million budget, you know, we'd be pulling out the stops here, but this is the best I can do, okay? Also, yeah, I realised that was probably quite clearly scripted at times, but, you know, I can't remember all of my fun facts about the film. But anyway, what I'm going to do now is just kind of have like a casual, like kind of just little info dump to slash discussion type thing, just giving you my general thoughts on the film. And then hopefully we'll maybe have a guest on to discuss it, if I can drag one of my friends along to talk to me about a boy for 20 minutes. But anyway, but yeah. So, I mean, obviously, I've probably made it quite clear up to this point. This is literally, I think, probably my favourite film of all time. You know, I know it's quite rare for people to say, oh, yeah, I've got a favourite film of all time, blah, blah, blah. But, like, you know, if I had to pick one film to have on a desert island with me for the rest of time, it probably would be About a Boy. Like, previously, I would have said maybe Silence of the Lambs, or which sounds a bit psychopathic, but it's just a great film. Or, like, I was really into this, like, quirky indie film from 2014 called Frank. And when I look back on it, I mean, it's a good film, but I'm not necessarily like, oh, my God, it's my favourite film of all time, you know, blah, blah, blah. Not quite in the same way that I look at, like, About a Boy, say. So that's interesting, but anyway, maybe I've just always been into like quirky indie films, although 30 million isn't like an indie film budget. Hang on one sec, you're going to hear some live SFX of me googling the budget of Frank, so enjoy the sounds of my mechanical keyboard. Frank, Office, Mojo, not a plug. Okay, so Frank had a budget of, doesn't say. Oh, mysterious. Apparently it doesn't even have a budget. They just kind of made it. Well, fair enough. I want to know the budget. Come on. I know this is completely off topic, but if you listen to my main show, you'll be used to this sort of thing by now. Frank movie 2014 budget. Here we go. What? $1 million? I don't think so. I think it was... Oh my God, it really was $1 million. Wow. Well, there you go. I mean, that's very impressive. It's a very good film for $1 million. Yeah. I know that sounds like, you know, a lot. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying, you know, $1 million is an insubstantial amount of money, but in filmmaking terms, you know, normally you'd be looking at a budget of like 15 mil and that would be considered like an indie movie. So, wow, $1 million. But anyway, back to About a Boy, which had a stonking great big budget of $30 million. Still my favourite film of all time. Every time I rewatch it, I do cry. I shed a little tear. It's just so beautiful. Again, I'm really trying hard not to talk about like spoilers here, but it's actually interesting because in my original introduction, just to sort of kick off my little discussion here, in my original introduction, I was writing about American Pie, but there's a quote that says American Pie is a film that's dripping with like male masculinity and like male sexuality. And it's kind of that idea of like teenage love and romance exclusively from a male perspective in terms of like a coming of age film. And like, you know, a lot of that I think is kind of like the bravado of American Pie. I haven't seen American Pie. Every single clip of it I've seen, I just kind of think, nah. Even though it's directed by the directors of my favourite film of all time, it just doesn't look like it's a film for me necessarily. But you know, it's a very sort of like, rah, you know, kind of hoorah kind of film from what I've seen and from what I've seen a lot of other people say. But About a Boy is just so, it kind of amazes me that the Weitz brothers then went on to direct About a Boy, because it kind of amazes me how different About a Boy is to that description. Like, it's literally about like compromised masculinity in a sense. Like, will the main character, I'm getting really like pretentious here, but bear with me. Will the main character of About a Boy is just so unlikable as like a man. Like, if you, even though it's played by Hugh Grant, which I think is kind of the genius in the casting, but we'll get onto that, even though he's like, Will is played by Hugh Grant, there's just such like, there's such a dislikability to his character. The whole point of his character, again, not getting into spoilers, is that he's this kind of selfish, completely closed off individual who again just lives off the royalties that his father set him up with, you know, from all those years ago. And that he's never like tried to do anything with his life. He's never interacted with maybe like the women in his life in a substantial way. Everything is just kind of consumerist, you know. I mean, this might be the first time anyone's compared Fight Club to About a Boy, but there is kind of a similarity there, I guess, in that sense, especially in the early part of the film where there's this emphasis on like consumerism being like the only way to fulfill your life, especially in this like kind of early 2000s period where, you know, everything was so uncertain, but the one certainty we did have was that everything was new and exciting and you should get like the latest X, Y, and Z sort of thing. Especially coming out like out of the 90s. You know, Cold War had just ended. Well, I mean, a bit before this. So Cold War had been over for a couple of years by this point. But it's kind of it had that overriding optimism of the 90s kind of carried over into it. I mean, obviously, broader political events of like the early, like very early 2000s, like we're talking now, weren't particularly bright in that sense. But I think in terms of the vibe of this film and just like the setting it's in, you do really get that kind of late 90s optimism, as it were. And I guess that feeds into that kind of whole like consumerism is the way to fulfill the hole in your soul, as it were. And yeah, again, the reason I bring up Fight Club is that is literally the whole point of Fight Club. And the other point of Fight Club is that idea of compromised masculinity in the sense of, you can tell this is very unscripted, but the whole point of Fight Club is, you can tell like this kind of bravado, this kind of like overcompensation of masculinity and complete rejection of consumerism that Edward Norton undergoes as a character is kind of like the opposite of what happens with Will and like Hugh Grant in About a Boy. Because, like, he wholeheartedly throws himself into, like, consumerism and trying to just, like, replace all human interaction with consumerism. And I guess that's kind of the note that, like, of contrast that struck with Marcus, aka Nicholas Holt's character, in the sense that Nicholas Holt is, like, he's a young boy. He doesn't have any of that kind of jaded cynicism about the world that Will has. And then that's kind of the journey the two go on. And it's just really beautiful seeing like that relationship develop between the two. And like, I mean, okay, spoilers. Okay, I'm going to give a timestamp. I'm going to drop in while I'm editing this and give a timestamp of when I stop talking about spoilers. But spoilers for now.
Ask and you shall deliver, past version of me. 21:46 is the timestamp you should go to if you want to avoid spoilers. Also, this needs to be noted, in the original version of this spoiler warning, I was talking about how my chips were being burnt as I was recording it because I'd taken so many attempts to do the take as I was sat behind the curtain in my kitchen. So there you go. Dedication to the art.
It's really beautiful seeing how Will's relationship with women, specifically... Rachel Weisz,
sort of develops as a result of his kind of opening his horizons with Marcus. So, like, the thing is with Marcus and Will, they're just such disparate characters. I mean, obviously, like, Will tries to get rid of him at the very start of the film. He's like, I do not want anything to do with you or your mother. And obviously, Fiona, as a character, suffers from very serious mental health issues throughout the film. And that's, it's kind of that rejection of any sort of seriousness. It's that rejection of any sort of human connection that Will seeks to make, because he doesn't want to let go of that kind of, like, selfish, consumerist-filled life he previously lived. I don't know if any of that makes sense. It makes sense in my head. But again, this is a spoiler bit, so hopefully you've all seen the film while I'm discussing this. Sorry, my mechanical keyboard just went there. But yeah, again, it's just this kind of idea of how a cynical, like, single man's relationship with the world, rather, can kind of be broadened out via that kind of, like, childish eye and that childish perspective on the world. And that's eventually what helps, like, Will come out of that kind of bubble of sort of sheltered, consumerist, very, like, again, to quote Will in the very opening of the film, and as I quoted in my introduction, you know, no man is an island, according to John Donne, but Will says he's a very happy island. But then, you know, by the end of the film, he's saying, you know, islands can have adjourning islands and you can have bridges between islands, which is just, I mean, I don't know. I know it probably sounds cheesy if you are very naughty and you skipped this part of the episode, despite the fact I just literally said this is the spoiler part and you haven't seen the film. I know that probably sounds cheesy, but in the context of the actual film, it's just such a beautiful moment. And yeah, I just, and just that kind of, like, that building of relationships. That's, I guess, okay, note to me, future me editing, this is where I'm going to stop spoilers. Okay. There we go. Right? We're all here? Right, excellent. Okay, so, I mean, I guess the whole point of the film, if I was to sum it up, is, like, relationships. It's how we develop relationships. And I guess the film, even though it was made in the early 2000s and it doesn't have that kind of reflective look, so, you know, films like Boyhood, for example, where they filmed, you know, they started, actually, incidentally, they started filming Boyhood in 2002 when this film was released. But films like that, which have the opportunity to do a retrospective on the early 2000s and sort of earlier periods of time, and then they can sort of make those broader discussions about, well, you know, how were we feeling as a general population at that time? You know, what were the fears and anxieties? How were relationships between individuals formed, et cetera, et cetera? Like, About a Boy, it very neatly sums up the current feeling of 2002. And it doesn't even, it's so skilled in the fact it doesn't need to have that kind of reflective look back. Like, this isn't a film, like, to make my point clearer, this isn't a film that was made in, like, 2008, but is set in 2002. So they, like, know how to sort of present it. It's just so, like, you know, obviously I was born in 2002. I don't have many memories of 2002, but, you know, definitely that earlier period of the 2000s, like, my first memories, I guess I had sort of went out from, like, 2006, 2005, 2006. And, you know, I remember that time really clearly, and it's sort of, I don't know, maybe that's just kind of my perception of the film is also fed into, oh God, sorry, nearly knocked my iPad / microphone over there. I guess my perception of the film is in part kind of drawn in from that, like, whole optimism I had from my own childhood, if that makes sense. Maybe that's why I like the film so much, is that, you know, I am a child of the 2000s. I have very fond memories of the 2000s, and then this film in turn presents the mid 2000s very positively. I mean, sure, if you are, you know, not born in the 2000s, but you sort of had a very clear recollection of the 2000s, maybe you're an adult, and you didn't have a great time, you might see this film as very saccharine, you know. But I personally don't feel that way. Yeah, it's interesting, sort of that balance between, like, although that being said, you know, not naming names, cough, cough, Jermaine, cough, cough. But I know people who were also born in 2002 and, like, are the exact same age as me who didn't have as positive a relationship with this film. Like, it wasn't sort of this incredible, like, heartwarming experience to them as it was for me, as it were. So I think that's definitely interesting. So yeah, I mean, all opinions welcome is what I'm going to say. But that's kind of, like, my broad feeling about the film and its plot. Hopefully I didn't get too pretentious. I mean, it is a film, again, as I say, it's one of my favourite films of all time. So obviously I'm gonna be getting quite deep into it. But anyway, I guess, like, more broadly, I mean, it's interesting that this film is one of my favourite mid-2000s films, because as you probably noticed from my ramblings just then, I am quite pretentious when it comes to my film taste. You know, and, like, I'm always one of those people who's like, oh yeah, but what about, like, the cinematography? Or, like, oh yeah, what about this, that and the other? But, you know, this film is in no way stylized. It doesn't have anything particularly special going on with the cinematography or with, like, the acting. There's no, like, kind of Wes Anderson staging, as it were. It's such a human film. Like, it feels like all of the, like, this is my big issue with a lot of films coming out these days. And not to be like one of those people who's like, oh, all these films coming out these days. But, you know, my big issue with a lot of the films coming out these days, again, sorry about that, is old man waves fist at sun moment. But anyway, a lot of my issues are sort of like this kind of sitcom-y vibe a lot of films have. Cough, cough, Marvel films, cough, cough. But like this kind of like very sort of tongue-in-cheek, everything feels disingenuous. Like even serious drama films, they don't feel real because everything just feels like it was filmed on a soundstage. There is no suspension of disbelief because none of the characters actually speak like they're human beings. Whereas in this film, like it's still maintaining that kind of wholesome, that kind of tongue-in-cheek vibe, but it's written like actual characters are speaking sort of thing. And like, I guess in large part, that is carried through by the actor. Again, I have not acted since my year 6 Lieber's play, so like, who am I to comment on the acting of people who have been in this profession for years and years and years? But like, to me, the acting in About a Boy is also just so perfect. It's just so, it's so, what's the word? It's just like, again, it kind of feeds into that whole thing about realism and speaking like you're an actual human being. Like, I mean, going back to my point about casting Hugh Grant as Will, it's such a genius move because, like, obviously at this point in his career, Hugh Grant, 42 years old, I do believe. I only know that because I've just researched the film. I don't have like a creepy recollection of Hugh Grant's age. But anyway, he's coming straight off the back of films from the 90s, like Notting Hill, Four Weddings. You know, he's had this incredible rise to like stardom. He's sort of seen as that this kind of Hollywood heartthrob, you know, this kind of like, you know, winking, you know, heartthrob British man who sort of, you know, goes, oh, hello, babe, all that sort of thing. You know, like, you get what I mean. Okay, don't say you don't get what you mean. You don't say you don't get what I mean when I say that, but anyway. But, like, so casting him as this kind of very dislikable character, this very inherently dislikable character, is really interesting. And again, this is a weird point of comparison, but looking a bit further forward to Bridget Jones's Diary, which I'm going to check now, so stay tuned for some more ASMR mechanical keyboard typing. But I believe Bridget Jones's Diary came out in 2004. Bridget Jones's Diary. No, 2001. Oh, okay. So this film was earlier. So maybe this is, you know, I thought, okay, that changed my whole perception because I thought About a Boy was like Hugh Grant's first role where he didn't necessarily play a likable character. That probably sounds a bit mean, but you know, hey, Bridget Jones apparently was, because obviously Hugh Grant and Bridget Jones, I can't swear on the radio, but he's not a very nice chap in that film, is he? He's not a very nice chappy. I mean, he's definitely not as dislikable as he is in Bridget Jones's Diary. Also, Bridget Jones's Diary is kind of serving it's catering to a different vibe, if that makes sense. It's not as serious as About a Boy is necessarily. But it's interesting that there's this kind of pivot in the early 2000s with Hugh Grant's roles where he's still kind of presenting as this kind of, you know, heartthrobby English bloke, but there's a thread of dislikability very strong in Bridget Jones's case, and sort of a point of his character arc in About a Boy. Like, he starts as this very dislikable character and then eventually grows into this, you know, slightly redeemed character, but sort of he's on the mend again. Spoiler alert for me editing. Here's a timestamp if you want to skip the spoilers. Timestamp is 29:12 if you want to avoid spoilers. I like whispering into the microphone. He's got, by the end of the film, as I say, when he's with Rachel Weisz and he's got this much happier and healthy relationship with the humans around him, the characters around him, I should say. You see that development, and that's not something he gets in Bridget Jones, because again, he's just meant to be this villainous archetype of a character. He's not actually meant to be at all likable in Bridget Jones. But I think that's definitely an interesting twist in his choice of characters. Like, I think you'd be hard pressed to say that like his character in Notting Hill or Four Weddings is dislikable or written to be dislikable, for example. But anyway, I digress. I've already been talking to myself for 15 minutes about this film. So I think, you know, maybe we should bring in someone else. Also some songs, yeah. So yeah, I think I've nattered and pretentiously moaned about a boy enough. I thought it'd be fun if I like did a rating of each film I see in these shows. So obviously I'm going to give About a Boy a 10. It's a 10 out of 10. I will not be hearing anyone else give any other rating for this film. I'm sorry. It is a 10 out of 10. I don't know if you guys have ever seen those Fantano like videos where he reacts to people like rating certain albums which he thinks are 10 out of 10 and then they'll give it like an 8 and he just like violently reacts. That's me if you give a Battle Boy less than a 10. Okay, I'm just saying. It's a 10 out of 10. I promise not every single film I watch as part of this sort of series of shows, I'm going to give a film a 10 out of 10 every single time, I promise. But you know, maybe I will actually. No, I'm not actually. But this is definitely a certifiable 10 out of 10. And I wanted to start with a film that is my favourite of all time. And, you know, something that, you know, I think that the most amount of people would gain the most amount of watching. Like, if there's nothing else that this show achieves, I want the people who wouldn't necessarily have seen About a Boy to go out and see it. Because, again, it's an all-time classic, really.
Hello, me from the future. At this point in the original broadcast, I proceeded to play a couple of songs from the original About a Boy soundtrack, talk about them a bit, and then go into my interview that I recorded with my wonderful friend and confidant, Finley Marsh, about a Boy. Unfortunately, I can't do that on this version because, you know, that actually involves me playing copyrighted music, which, since this is being released in podcast form, in its remastered hashtag 2025 state, I can't actually do that. So instead, we're just going to very delicately jump to the interview that I did with Finley. And yeah, I hope you enjoy. Bye! Yes, lo and behold, that was Donna and Blitzen from the About a Boy soundtrack. A wonderful song, as I'm sure the good people of Cambridge who I have subjected it to on multiple occasions will attest. Cam FM 97.2, we are on air right now. Well, not right now as I'm recording this, but as you're hearing this, we will be on air. I did manage to source a friend in the end who actually dutifully, as you'll hear, rewatched the film and also wrote down some of their favourite quotes from it. I'm of course talking about the wonderful Finley Marsh, who joined me over the wondrous interwebs. Those fibre optic cables under the sea connect us dutifully for half an hour to discuss About a Boy. And so here is my interview with him. Well, interview sounds a bit great. Here's my chat with him. Regular listeners of my main show, Days of Magical Mystery Mix, will be aware that Finley is a mainstay. So it only made sense that he broke in, as it were, the new Daisy's Magical Mystery mid-2000s movie mumblings, format. So here we are. Bye!
Psst. Also, upon, like, re-listening to our interview together, I realised that we talked quite a lot about, like, the theme and very in-depth characterizations, so I'd recommend not listening to this if you haven't seen the film before. It's not like overtly spoilery, like it sometimes fits into that, but I would just recommend watching the film first and forming your own opinions before listening.
So welcome everyone, it's me again, my disembodied voice, which you're probably sort of too used to by now at this point in the program, but luckily you won't just have to hear from me, Hugh Grant and Toni Collette. Oh no, Rachel Weisz was who I used in the clip from earlier. But anyway, that aside, I'm joined by frequent guest and contributor to Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix, in absentia, Finley Marsh. So would you like to introduce yourself, Finley? Yeah, hello.
Yeah, happy to be here. I'd say I'm probably the most frequent guest, you know. It's a magical mystery mix that I'm a comfortable resident in, you know.
Well, I mean, precisely, you know, it's just like, it's an exclusive club to be in, you know?
Yeah.
And you're technically the first guest on the exciting new Daisy's Magical Mystery mid-2000s movie Mumblings, so, you know.
It's good. I do like the alliteration.
Thank you.
Very good.
I thought it rolls off the tongue.
I only weep for the future guests who will struggle to live up to, you know, that we have here today. It's going to be tough.
I think they're going to find it hard to live up to your level of preparation, because Finley has, to my knowledge, prepared some quotes for us to enjoy.
They are good ones. When I first watched it, these were some of my favourite ones, but I picked up a few. There is my favourite one, but I'll get onto that later.
Right, well, I guess we should start off by just like, by the way, before we go into this, disclaimer, I have seen this film upwards. I mean, you'll have heard my preamble bit before this point anyway. I have seen this film God knows how many times. It's my favourite film of all time. I didn't actually rewatch it for this episode because I'm just so undedicated, but I have seen it approximately 5 billion times. So I like to think I'm a bit of an expert. But Finley very diligently went back and rewatched it today, as I was reassured.
Oh, yeah.
So Finley, like, as a fresh set of eyes on it, what did you think of the film?
It's really good. I actually really, really enjoy it. I didn't know it was actually your favourite film of all time. That's
yeah.
Pretty, I guess that makes
have
sense.
You, have you seen it before?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've seen it before, but I watched it originally upon your recommendation. And I did like it. I would, I think overall, I mean, I guess I'll go straight to the rating. I'd give it like a solid, like, I don't know, like 8 maybe out of 10.
Okay. Fair enough.
It's good. I think one of the strongest points is like, the kind of internal monologue that you hear throughout, I think both with Hugh Grant's character and Nicholas Holt's
Marcus,
breakout role.
No, yeah, I mean, this film actually predates you, doesn't it? 2003. I always say because
when I was born in 2003. When was this released?
2002.
Oh,
so it's the same year as me, and like that's kind of I always like, you know, not only is it my favorite film, but we're also the same age, so I really like that. I mean, so like 8 out of 10, that's pretty high. I mean, you know, people listening, but I also gave my own rating. I basically, to fill you in, Finley, before this little bit here, I just talked for about 15 minutes about this film. And I gave it a 10 out of 10, well, obviously, because it's like my favorite film of all time. But I mean, it's like a 10 out of 10, but you know, obviously I there are faults with it, like, you know, in terms of like the actual technical craft of it, it's not like it's not the most mind-blowing thing, and I think I mentioned that, but it's still like, for me, and just the way it like made me feel while I was watching it, it's a 10 out of 10.
I mean, arguably, that's kind of like, you know, without getting too cheesy, it's kind of like the beauty of film in a way, in that it's often like some of the more simple ones. It's not necessarily like formulaic in that if they do this camera shot or they do this, then everyone's going to love it. It's going to be their favorite. It's like, you know, you can have a film that's, you know, relatively simple, and yet at the same time, it's just about how you feel when you watch it, and, you know, that's how it becomes your favorite. So, I'd say it's a good thing.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously I'm in complete agreement there. I mean, I was going to ask as well, like, about the soundtrack. So did you, like, you know, like the soundtrack? Because that's something we've given quite a lot of discussion to on the show already. Because, you know, in the sense it is radio, obviously. But then also, I don't know if you've kind of felt this, but I feel like the About a Boy soundtrack's kind of found fame outside of the film itself. Like, whenever I talk to a lot of people about a Boy, they're like, oh, the soundtrack's really good. Like, if you hear, like, Trainspotting, that's another film like that. And I was sort of thinking, did you pick up on that at all? Or, like, you know, any thoughts on that?
Not really. I think I noticed the soundtrack too much. I think it's hilarious that you say that people, when you mention the film, will say about, talk about the soundtrack. Whenever I've been with you and you've talked about the film, most people haven't actually seen it when I've been there.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I don't think it's super well known. I don't know.
About a Boy, I feel like it is quite well. I mean, maybe that's just in my circles, though. Like,
yeah, maybe not with people like our age.
Maybe. I don't know, I first watched it with my mum and my Australian grandma, so like maybe the Australians are sort of more into it.
Maybe, yes, she's a huge Australian fan base.
Yeah, who knows, honestly. But yeah, like...
But yeah, I don't know, I don't notice the soundtrack too much, but I don't think it was something I was paying particular attention. I mean, obviously you've got Barbara Flack's Killing Me Softly.
Tune.
But yeah, I think the soundtrack does pair well in the sense that, I mean... Maybe the fact that it doesn't particularly stand out too much. I think it does fit the vibe of like early 2000s quite well.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know,
big block TVs and DVD players and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of something I felt whenever I watch it. Is like you get that like pure mid like 2002 vibe, and it's like really interesting that it almost feels like, you know, you have like Y2K TikToks and things these days. It almost feels like someone's made like a sort of homage to 2002. But it's just like it presents like the like feeling of the early 2000s so well, I found.
Yeah, what was it? I remember when you were talking to a bunch of us before, you described it as a renaissance of the early 2000s.
Did I? That is a quote. I'm proud of that. I'll claim that very happily. Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, I do feel like, you know, it's so like emblematic of the time. Like, if I was to show someone, if someone was like, what was like, I don't know, 2002 like, I mean, obviously I don't remember it that much, but like if someone was to ask me what the early 2000s were, I would still say like, oh yeah, About a Boy, you know, because it's just so like emblematic of the time. And it's also got a Hugh Grant in his 40s, so, you know, he's coming off of that. That actually leads me on. What did you think of Hugh Grant? Because that leads me on, because this is coming out of like the sort of rom-com era Hugh Grant. I mean, this is technically kind of still a rom-com, but like not really in like the barest sense. It's more so like about like in his individual character more so than it is like about a relationship. But I was sort of wondering what you thought about that.
It feels like a very honest character, I'd say, because before you've got him a lot before he's playing sort of like, oh, look, he's like, you know, the quirky English man, and look at him, he's always sort of, you know, he's a bit shy and a bit like, I'm terribly sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's in here, he's a lot more unapologetic as a character, which I actually find quite admirable. I mean, I know that he's like, he's a bit of, he's not a great guy. He's quite naturally selfish. But I think in terms of his general sort of demeanor, he has a very strong sense of self. And it's very sort of unwavering, and maybe only on a surface level, but I think he's quite comfortable in his own skin, which I think is quite admirable here. Especially when, I mean, even early on in the film, when he's sort of talking to his friends, you know, when he goes to that that couple's house and he's like, initially now asking, and like they're being quite like rude, I think, in the sense suggesting that there's no point to his life if he doesn't have kids.
I think
is, you know, I disagree with that entirely. And I think even though they're sort of saying that his life has sort of no meaning, he's very kind of, you know, steadfast and very sort of like, well, you know, sort of whatever kind of thing, which I think is good. So I'd say in general, I think it was quite an interesting role in terms of how unapologetic, and I suppose in some levels, because you have like the internal monologue, quite an honest character, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's really interesting that you say that, because like when I was sort of initially talking about like this film, I kind of felt like when I initially watched this film, I kind of felt like he was like a really morally irredeemable character, in that like he goes on this complete switch like halfway through the film. So like, I didn't really like. It's really interesting that you bring up like that kind of you kind of sympathize him nonetheless in the beginning. Even before he's had that kind of like supposed switch, you do kind of, which is something I'd not really considered before, and like that point about sort of obviously you can find meaning and fulfillment in your life if you don't have kids, maybe that's like a cultural shift, because like, I mean, obviously, like, I don't know, I feel like with people our age, it's so like there is next to no like onus on having children. I mean, obviously there's like, you know, historically you're meant to, you know, like meet someone you love, have a family, but like I feel like with our generation there's much more of like a focus on like you as an individual, and you're not necessarily pressured into like having kids.
I mean, I think it's kind of interesting that I don't know, I think it's to do with moderation, right? Because although that is a good point that, you know, his life still has meaning to himself even if it's, he doesn't have children, but also the fact that he's never had a job and stuff like that, and he's like 30. I think, you know, I mean, maybe, I mean, I guess if he's happy with that, but one of the things I was wondering is the fact that how would he not be bored? Like, even though he's got like his routine and stuff, I don't know how he wouldn't be bored by 38 with like nothing but just playing pool and going to like the hairdresser and watching Countdown.
I mean, mate, I've not been doing anything for 2 weeks after I've got home from uni. I went to Cambridge very briefly to do like open days and stuff, but now that I'm home, it's literally like I could not be going 38 years without like something to do, sort of thing.
No, generally, like I'm literally like, I don't know, I think I'm, well, a bit of an off topic, but I think I'm a bit broken by Cambridge in the sense that I can't enjoy doing nothing. I get quite restless.
So true.
Like, I have to have something, and making LinkedIn made it worse.
No,
it's like seeing everyone's like internship, and I'm like, what are we on today? Yeah, it's the gym, and then Stereons of the Void, I think.
No, LinkedIn is genuinely like, you know, obviously, you know, other social medias are available, yada yada yada, but like, I think particularly when you're at university, LinkedIn is horrific, because it's literally just, as you say, it's everyone just being like, I'm delighted to da da da, I've got an internship at da da da, and like it's in, like on the topic of About a Boy, I don't know if Will would have survived if LinkedIn was around in 2002.
I mean, honestly, I think, you know, I think that would have been more of a justification for him to live as he was, kind of like, I mean, if you got the royalties from the song,
then, Santa's, you know, super sleigh.
No,
yeah, well, that's really, I mean, my other question I was going to ask was sort of like, what do you, like, on the topic of it kind of being a rom-com, like, what did you think of, like, the romantic aspect of the film? Like, did you enjoy that? Did you find it a bit cheesy?
I think going back to what you said about kind of like there was a bit of a switch in terms of the redemption, I think the romantic plotline felt very bolted on.
Mm.
And I don't think it's necessarily a drawback. because it doesn't take too much of a focus. It's kind of like she's there and then she's at the end kind of thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't take too much of a detour. But again, I think they could have easily done it without that. But I suppose I think it does tie in well in that it's I guess it's sort of about his journey of embracing commitment and not necessarily running from it, and not having himself as an island. I think that's another outlet. I think it's not just about, you know, I think they could have done it without that. They could have done it with that. He's just sort of more involved with, the family, with Marcus and Fiona.
Yeah.
I think it did feel a bit bolted on, but I don't think it's necessarily a drawback.
Yeah, I mean, I must say, I did feel like a kind of similar way when I first watched the film, in the sense that I was kind of like, why doesn't he go out with like Fiona, or like, you know, why is there no like mutual feeling there? And that kind of annoyed me a bit. But like, I think over time, as I've like watched the film more and more, I've kind of come to really appreciate like Rachel. I think the character is actually called Rachel as well as the actress, which is a bit weird. But I've come to like really appreciate that, because it's kind of that I clipped it in this show, so listeners at home, you will have heard this clip already, but it's the bit where he first meets Rachel at the bar, and it's like, he's like, I just suddenly realized that there is absolutely nothing interesting that I've done with my life. So then when she's like, oh, what do you do, he's just kind of like speechless. And I thought that was like a really interesting moment, in the sense that you might not necessarily have had that with Fiona, just given the context of like spat and things, like single parents alone together, by the way, listeners at home.
Single parents alone together.
Exactly. Thank you very much. if you needed a recap on that. But I guess I kind of like grew to appreciate her character a bit more through that.
Yeah, actually, I'll tell you what, I think I'll revise what I originally said. I don't think it is a bit bolted on, but I do think it is quite good in terms of the plot line, because I think it shows that before he didn't really care about admitting that he sort of done nothing with his life, but as soon as he sort of meets someone that he does, I think, begin to care about quite quickly in comparison to sort of the women he's never called back or sort of treated as one night stands. It's interesting how much either he then his sort of I suppose confidence sort of quickly dwindles. It's not he's more self conscious about the fact that he's done nothing with his life, whereas before when he was sort of as existing as an island, he didn't really care. He was sort of like, well, I've done nothing, and you know, I'm not embarrassed by that. But when he meets someone who does sort of have responsibility and has a child, has a job, he then suddenly feels, I think, embarrassed in comparison, which I think it's good for the, as part of his turning point as a character in his arc.
That's interesting, because that kind of brings up the whole idea of like how you perceive yourself compared to like how others perceive you. And there's that whole thing like Marcus telling him he's a loser sort of thing, spoilers. Mm. And it's kind of like he doesn't take any notice of it then, but like when there's someone who he's like romantically interested in says it, he actually like that's kind of the turning point for his character, which I don't know, that kind of raises interesting questions of like, well, you know, what was the message they were trying to give there? Is like the only notable like relationship you have with someone a romantic one, for example?
That's actually interesting you bring that up, because it's kind of like, well, I don't know, is it then still a bit more selfish in terms of the fact he's only kind of realized it when he's sort of trying to be with someone else, or rather all the other people in his life telling him that, you know, does he not want more, and you know, saying that he's kind of a loser. It's only when there's something for him to gain that he kind of switches on a bit more. Maybe that's an interesting thing to kind of think about.
And especially when you think about like the whole plot kind of revolves around him trying to get with someone romantically, so like him joining Single Parents Alone Together spat, like that the whole like reason he joins that is basically just to get women. So it's interesting that like his whole growth as like a character is stemmed from like the most selfish acts that you could imagine, sort of thing.
And also Rachel Weisz's character, her son in the film is so funny. I think it's so good that
he's so good.
The son, he's hilarious.
No, he is great.
One of my favorite parts of the film.
No, I mean, yeah. So I was like, going back to your quotes, were that like just before we like dive into them, was there any particular like reason you like picked those out, or like were there any like broader themes within them that you kind of wanted to chat about?
I mainly picked them out because I think they were just really funny. I think that's the kind of ones I picked up. Rather than more poignant, I went for the more comedic aspect.
Mm.
But I've got some here. So I think there was one I didn't pick up on initially, but I think it does speak quite a lot about his initial character, Hugh Grant, that is. When he's following the ambulance after, I guess, the incident, right?
Yeah.
The Dead Duck Day, as it's named by Marcus. And obviously something quite horrible has just happened. And he's with Marcus in the car, and he's talking about, like, oh, you know, obviously it's awful. And he goes, but driving fast behind the ambulance was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think that's just hilarious. His initial kind of, like, still, he's still thinking about, you know, himself and his own kind of experience. It's not necessarily, I don't know, it's weird. It's not necessarily, maybe it is selfish, but it's more in the sense of just like so oblivious to kind of greater concerns other than his own immediate enjoyment and gratification.
Yeah.
It's kind of the fact that, like, and I suppose on some sense it can be a good way to live and sort of focusing on the little things, which I guess if you're his character, you have to do because you've got sort of nothing else going on. But it is quite interesting that something so horrifying, he's just happy, he's just witnessed it, and immediately he sort of reverts back to, oh, but, you know, driving behind the ambulance is fantastic, which I think partly, you know, maybe to analyze it a bit deeper, is probably part of a self-defense mechanism.
Yeah. It's
that kind of, like, running from anything serious and sort of focusing, oh, you know, isn't this great, isn't this fun, sort of, yeah. You know, trying to sort of put up a shield between himself and anything, like, really real or serious.
Yeah.
Yeah, another quote I had down actually is when he says he volunteered at Amnesty International, he's on the phone. I think
I love this. Yeah, my favourite scene. Yeah.
I said this to one to you before. I think, which when he's on the phone, he goes, "And you haven't got a boyfriend? Talk about human rights violations."
It's so good. It's so good. and then the guy behind him is just like, "What?" Yeah. That's
again. I mean, it's funny, but you can also kind of view it as like his sort of inability to sort of engage with anything serious. You know what I mean, or anything that's kind of sort of emblematic of his kind of selfishness as a character. Kind of
I think,
but again, sort of looking for his own gain still.
I think that might be like the kind of. I mean, even though that's like a very comedic cutaway, that's probably like the most blatant example of his selfishness as a character because it's like volunteering for Amnesty International, like on the call center, is considered like one of the most selfless things you could do as a person. And he kind of turns it on his head into that romantic conquest. So, I mean, almost like him pretending to be a single parent and going to SPAT is, I would like, some might even argue that that's less problematic than using the Amnesty International phone book to call up people. Yeah. But it's interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I think one of the funniest bits when he's actually in the SPAT group, when he's sort of basically lying and giving his narrative about his like 2-year-old son, Ned. And when he talks about the mother leaving.
Yeah.
No. And then someone next to him goes, "She left." And he goes, "Yeah, like that." I think that's really funny. It's like the way he says it, the sort of tone of voice of like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite bits. I think it's a small detail, but I think it's one of the funniest bits.
Complete. I mean, it's a funny scene as well, and like just isn't on what we're talking about in terms of like societal expectations. You know, obviously there's that whole thing about. I mean, obviously it's all women, so they're going to be coming from it from like a female perspective. But like, it's really interesting that you know when this film was made 2002, the idea of like a woman leaving the relationship and then child support going onto the man's shoulders was considered such a like. She left sort of thing, you know. Yeah, whereas I guess in like this year, the year of our Lord 2023, that would be considered less weird sort of thing. Were there any other quotes you'd like to share with the good people of Cambridgeshire and beyond?
Oh, my this is my ultimate favorite from the film.
Oh yeah,
it's at the end. I've definitely mentioned this to you before, but this is my favorite one. It's at the talent show at the end. And it's just off. There's been like these boys doing like breakdancing or whatever, and the headmaster just comes out and he goes, "That was the Death Penalty crew with Murder Faux Life." That's one of my favourite bits. I just think it's so funny.
I love that bit. No, I can't. Isn't it the actor from I'm really annoyed. I can't remember his name, but it's the actor from Breaking Bad who runs the like company that Walt left, isn't it? I think that's him.
Oh, is it? I don't know.
One sec, let me double check, because I'm pretty sure more aesthetic.
I don't remember it being him, potentially.
It's just like that delivery of that was murder faux life. I do love that.
That was a death penalty crew with murder faux life.
No, that is good. I mean,
and they're all at 11, the death penalty crew.
I mean, also, just, you know, consider this, About a Boy may be the first film of the early 2000s to do that whole, like, yep, that's me. You're probably wondering how I ended up in this situation.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, a real trendsetter in that regard. Let's not lie.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. I'm currently looking at the entire cast and crew. Oh, was it, I might have been, what's his nuts, Mark Heap. Who's the guy from Friday Night Dinner who plays Jim.
Oh, really?
Mate, I might have been. Yeah, apparently he's in it. He's the maths teacher, apparently.
I don't know. I don't remember it.
I could be mistaken, though. I could be mistaken. But yeah, well...
Let me look at the cast. I've got the cast.
Yeah, you've got to get the... you've got to do it now, too. This is very fast.
Because I reckon... I watched it today, so I can't remember who. I don't really Mark Heap, but...
You'll probably recognise who it is when you look it up.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it was. Mark
no.
Heap. I think it might have been... Oh, it's got some guy called Roger Brearley.
Ooh.
It says Mr. Chalmers. That looks more like him.
Roger. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Good old Rog.
More like him.
Oh, I recognise this chap. What else has he been in? I recognise him so clearly. Sorry, this is very exciting listener content. But, yeah, no. Okay, look up Roger Brearley, everyone, and message in if you recognise him. DMMM at camfm.co.uk if you recognise him from something. But yeah, did you have any other quotes? Anyway, sorry, getting off topic. Were there any other like quotes or anything that you sort of thought of?
I think those are the main ones.
Yeah.
That I like. I think it's got to be the death penalty crew one and the you haven't got a boyfriend. Like human rights violation.
The main thing I kind of talked about in like my little preamble was like the quote, you know. No man is an island, and then by the end of it, it's like, you know, no man is an island. Wait, no man, all men are islands, but some islands can sort of have adjourning islands and things. And I thought that was just like a really sweet way of putting it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the whole thing about, you know, you've got to build bridges with people and then you burn those bridges. And I don't know, I thought that was just like a really nice way of putting it. Very, very apt film criticism from yours truly yet again, but yeah.
Mm. You know, I'm wondering, do you reckon out of all of, maybe not all of them, but do you reckon that this role is quite similar to how Hugh Grant is in real life, like quite sarcastic and quite kind of like a bit like deadpan in terms of his jokes kind of thing? Like,
yeah, I mean,
maybe not like, I don't know, maybe not fully like the womanizing aspect, like,
yeah,
potentially, but, I don't know, I feel like just from watching the interviews, I feel like this is, could be quite close to how he actually is.
No, I mean, no, true. I mean, like, obviously this came off of, like, his, you know, rom-com era where he's much more sort of unapologetically, you know, sort of, like, posh, inoffensive British man. And, like, one thing I discovered when I was doing the research for this is, which I think is live in my thing, but anyway, it basically, you know, Bridget Jones's Diary came out a year before this. I'm not sure if you've seen Bridget Jones's Diary.
I'm not.
You should definitely watch that. But basically, spoiler alert, minor spoiler alert, his character in that is not a very nice man, put it that way.
Yeah.
But in like kind of a similar way where he's still like a sort of sarcastic sort of, whoa, sort of, hey, like a gent sort of thing. But like, it's kind of the opposite of About a Boy where he starts off as a really good character and then ends as a really bad one.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's interesting that there was this kind of jump for more like in-depth roles on Hugh Grant's part, you know, I mean, in-depth as, you know, as much as About a Boy. I mean, you know, it's, but like, it's still like interesting to see that kind of switch.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, obviously I think Paddington 2 is probably as close as you're going to get to Hugh Grant in real life.
That's actually so true. Did you know that all of the photos in the house, have you noticed those are all of his old acting like headshots?
in the
house in Paddington 2. I literally love that. I mean, if anything else, Paddington 2 is literally a Hugh Grant propaganda film, because I don't think there is a man who I love and appreciate more in the world than like more than Hugh Grant after watching Paddington 2. But anyway,
yeah,
that again, listeners, that is a topic for another day.
I was gonna say
earlier,
I reckon, yeah, this is just sort of my own sort of my own watching, but you know when Toni Collette is walking Nicholas Holt to the gate. It's weird using the actors' names, but anyway, when she's walking to the gate for school, and when he's walking to the playground, and she sort of calls out to him, she goes, Marcus, I love you, like that. I mean, give the boy a chance.
Yeah, literally.
On the playground.
No, literally.
It's just like, I'm sure it can wait till later, or you can just say it before you go, but it's just like, I mean, honestly, it's like you're not doing him any favours with that.
Well, it's like, Peep Show, you know, I'm not sure if I can say what the actual quote is, but yeah, there's a very similar quote in that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the other thing is like, you know, that scene really reminded me of like Into the Spider-Verse, where it's like he's getting out the car and then it's like, Dad, I love you, sort of thing. And he makes like, oh.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, that's probably worse.
No, definitely.
But anyway, thank you guys. Thank you, Finley, for coming on.
It feels like that bit in
University Challenge was like, and it's goodbye from Finley Marsh. Goodbye.
Keys Cox.
Can you imagine how powerful Keys Cox would be? Let me on the University Challenge team, my God. But anyway, that's a topic for another day. But thank you so much for coming on, Finley, and for debuting Daisy's Magical Mystery Mid-2000s Movie Mumblings. And yeah.
There's many more to come.
Many, many more to come. All right, thank you very much. Goodbye. Well, okay, we're not going to hang up, but like, you know. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. So that is us done. Thank you all so much for listening. I know it's been a bit of an experimental one, but thank you for bearing with. If you enjoyed today's show, make sure to follow at Daisy Magical Mystery Mix on Instagram to keep up with any future shows. Also, if you have a recommendation for something for me to watch for next week's show, do message in Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix, dmmm@camfm.co.uk. That's dmmm@camfm.co.uk. Or alternatively, message me on Instagram at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix. But other than that, it's been a pleasure. And if nothing else, if you haven't seen this one before, I hope that this hour and a bit long show has encouraged you to seek it out. Okay, bye. Bye. Bye.